M35, number 3B.
The nay-nay is brought out like this, and you hear constantly that healing is accomplished by refuting error. And I just read them down quickly. There are a few dozens. It says, correcting the mistake, dispute the symptoms with signs, agree to disagree, meet disease with powerful mental opposition, blot out the images of disease, rise in rebellion against disease, make your own terms with disease, meet disease with mental negation, shut out unhealthy thoughts, do not admit bodily conditions, do not talk about conditions, argue against sickness, do not regard disease as a reality, efface from mind disease, make no unnecessary inquiries relative to disease, make no discouraging remark, not to draw unfavorable attention to symptoms, avoid speaking aloud the name of disease, abandon mortal beliefs, eradicate the image of disease. Can you hear? Constantly that rejecting of error through spiritual understanding, through affirmation, you negate error. We didn't have that before. It takes her nearly 400 pages. It's around about page 100, 400. It takes about 400 pages to come to that position. A position which actually usually is told right away to a patient right at the beginning. And therefore, when he does that, he does nothing else but argue. He hasn't within himself the spiritual Christ power with which to negate error. He negates it with his will, with his thinking, with mobilizing, so to say, his thinking faculties. It isn't really spiritual understanding which is refuting error. That's why in that third part I first showed you the ye, where she says it is really understanding that heals. The Bible shows us the faith in God heals, faith in the truth of being healed. Now that is naturally a cultured spiritual understanding with which afterwards she can show you can refute the errors with something more than just arguing and thinking. It is an inner attitude, an inner strength that refutes everything that comes near to that spiritual sanctuary. Isn't it terrific that just in one part that runs perhaps over about 20 pages, all that is there as a method for the practitioner to use? Can you see how she builds up? In the first part, first she says, well, a practitioner is not a thinker or a thinking machine that learns to think according to certain lines. He is a spiritual stature of manhood in Christ. It's a spiritual living power, not a thinking power. Then out of that altitude of spiritual consciousness, in the second part, we can establish the truth. We can realize what is the truth of God and see that that truth is established in the minds of mortals, that that is the only truth that the patient can know. And so in the third part, we realize that through that spiritual understanding or that spiritual attitude, we are now asked to refute everything that is unlike that spiritual attitude. We haven't made an epitome of the third part, so we could say refuting error with spiritual understanding. Refuting error with spiritual understanding. Yes, that's the third part. You still have room for the fourth then to write it?
Barely.
All right. Well, the main thing is that we get the spirit to flow. Did you catch the tone when I read down all those many refutings, or shall I read them again? No. Good. So we come to the fourth part, which is quite amazing here. how she ends up that whole chapter in regard to healing, namely that she would now bring out that actually disease is not the reality, that therefore we should realize that there is no disease, that there never was a disease, that really healing is not healing something, but that healing is really realizing that there is never anything to be healed. This is the fourth part, the realization that nothing ever needs to be healed because nothing could ever be diseased or sick. That sickness, because it's only a belief, is only existing in belief, and if we disbelieve the belief, we see heal through it. She makes here quite a few interesting climaxical statements in showing that believing in God, there is no disease. That in believing in God, there is no disease. She says in that text, there is no death, there is no disease. Disease was never there. There is no sickness before the tribunal of spirit. See, many of these quotations are now in that fourth part from the court case, which takes up most of the text of the fourth part. And there, when disease was brought before the court of truth, the verdict was their disease was never there. It wasn't taking disease away and overcoming disease, but to see in that consciousness that disease was never there, that we do not have to heal something. So she asked also in this part to make disease unreal to the patient, that mortals must be brought to the realization that there is no disease, and with the power of love, you really can heal instantaneously. Because, she says, the power of love is omnipotent, and so allies fear. See, the main point around about it is actually to show the disease is built on fear. Fear about what? Fear that there could exist something besides God. Therefore, if we heal ourselves of fear, it means that we heal ourselves of the belief that anything could have ever be diseased, that there could ever have been sin and sickness and death. And so this realization here is a realization that disease was never there, that the patient never really became sick and is sick, and therefore never really needs to be healed. Well, it's quite a climax here. Let's epitomize it, perhaps say, realizing that there is no disease. Realizing that there is no disease. So finally we got to that climax, you see, that we don't feel that if a case is presented to us, that it is a case. We realize it is not a case and does not need to be set right because it has never been anything but right. And that realization is here the climax that also takes away the fear of it. Yes, so here we have tried to epitomize the 12th chapter. Now we should go back and see what is the vertical in it. What is the common denominator in this Christianity vertical? And we can see that here the question is always somehow to lift really healing into a perfect principle and perfect idea, to lift healing up to the point of perfection, where we are not trying really to heal something that exists, but that we heal our ignorance about disease, and we can only heal our ignorance by lifting up consciousness to the point of seeing just perfection. Let's epitomize it that way. Lifting healing into perfect principle and perfect idea. Lifting healing into perfect principle and perfect idea. Shall we quickly run through that vertical and see if this common denominator is actually showing forth all those four variations of it? Creation says yes. You know, your basis is what? Your basis is not a sickness which you are going to heal. Your basis is not that sickness has been created. All that has been created by principle is a perfect idea, so your basis of healing is a perfect principle and a perfect idea. That's your starting point in healing. In the 10th chapter, Signs of Being, it says, you know, this is not a mystery, this healing. It is something that we can learn, step by step, and that everybody can learn it. So let's get that learning process to be instructed in the scientific idea which heals. So we learn the idea of principle, learn to know what is perfect principle and perfect idea, and that, she says, heals. Then when she comes to Christianity, to some objections answered, she could see that this learning process must be a learning process that is coupled with the spirit of Christianity, that the letter and the spirit are one, and so we have to elevate or lift up, really again, the whole healing process, not from a sick situation to a healthy situation, but we have to lift up a theoretical sense of healing to a practical sense of healing, where we put on the Christ-likeness that heals. And when we come to the practice of Christian Science, again, we lift up everything by starting out from the highest altitude of consciousness, from love, from loving affection. Start right out from that altitude of love, and from there, in the second part, we see that that is the truth about the patient. And in the third, we see that that truth about the patient demands from us that we are firm and perseverant and very definite in rejecting every other suggestion about our treatment, and therefore reject all kinds of suggestion and influence from outside and reject it, so that we see that there is nothing to be healed. Fourth part. Haven't we lifted it to perfect principle and perfect idea? I think this is very clear. Huh? It's a beautiful flow. If one has a cultured sense of the categories of Word, Christ, Christianity and Science, one can't help anymore but to hear the divine music. It's really wonderful art that is here presented through tone and tonality, and it's a beautiful symphony, actually. All right. So let's go further to the next vertical, and here we find quite a few interesting points when we come to the science chapters. The first chapter is teaching Christian Science. That chapter teaching Christian Science is a marvel. I don't think that one has really yet fathomed what that chapter really wants to teach us. It doesn't show how a teacher should present the subject to the student, how he should build up his subject. The subject is much, much deeper than that, and shows that how principle is teaching each one of us the true idea. Here, in regard to healing, we have here a chapter of only 20 pages, comparatively small chapter, with a terrific lot of references in it about healing. So it means that really here we have something important to learn, and so we may ask ourselves, what is the healing at that point? One would always feel that when one has arrived at the 12th chapter of Christian Science Practice, one would feel, now this is the end of it, here is the practice, what more can we learn about healing than the 12th chapter? And yet she goes on and explains healing still from another standpoint. It is asking here, actually, what qualifies a scientist to heal? See, it's not quite the same as in the 11th chapter, where she said that only Christian qualities can heal, and brought out all those Christian qualities and showed that the non-Christian qualities cannot heal, though it can be learned by everybody. But here now she lifts the Christian further up to be a scientist and asks what is really the qualities of a scientist in order to heal. And therefore we find here quite different qualities than in the 11th chapter. Actually, we would find here more the scientific qualities than the Christian qualities. And interesting enough, she says that what enables us to heal is to read science and health. See, she's now not indicating the Christian qualities of love and gentleness and tenderness and affection and things like that. Now she brings out the science qualities, the scientist qualities, and she says it is reading science and health. Well, naturally she means something more than just reading. She means actually studying it and pondering it and investigating it, not just reading it. You know, I don't know how it is, but at my time, even way back, you know, in the ancient world of my times, in the Christian Science movement, you were asked to read the lesson every day. We were not asked by John Dolly to read just one section every day, so that during 1 week we would read the whole lesson. But we are asked to read the whole lesson every day. And then when one was listening around, you could hear remarks like this: I can do the lesson in 18 minutes. So that is reading the textbook and the Bible. How quickly can I read it? Can I get it over in the morning? Nowadays I hear it's different. They speak it on a cassette, and then when driving to the office they listen to the lesson sermon while they are driving and stopping at the red lights and so on. Must be very interesting. Very deep search. So here it is, what makes a scientist is really to devote himself to scientific methods of investigation. See, like studying the textbook. He says strictly abiding by the teachings of Christian Science. See, that's now a very scientific attitude. Adhering strictly to the rules of Christian Science. You know, all this goes right through the chapter always, that strict abiding, that strict abiding by the theory. That's now here a great point. To conform to God's requirements. And then she brings in that terrific statement about the ethics of Christian Science. The ethics of Christian Science is necessary for healing. And you ask yourself, what on earth is the ethics of Christian Science? Because the ethics of Christian Science has nothing to do with ordinary ethics. Anyway, ethics is different from one country to the next, from one century to the next, from one race to the next, from one religion to the next, from one class of people to the other class of people. There is no fundamental ethics in humanity. They are just man-made rules and laws that have been accepted and to which one should now subjugate oneself. But when she speaks about the ethics of Christian Science, it is quite a different ethic. Namely, she says that all is mind. Can you think out what she means? To the ethics of Christian Science, that all is mind. That's a completely different ethic. Therefore, the ethics of science differs from the ethics of a religion, from the ethics of Christianity. It has a completely different ethics. Which kind of ethics? It's that kind of ethics where we see that whatever we do from mind, from the standpoint of the synonymous term, is ethical. And that's different than to obey the ethical code of a society. The ethical code of a society lays down the law and says it is unethical if you do this and that and the other. It's unethical if you are such and such and such a person and have such and such a character. And they condemn certain characters, and other characters is all right, but not in mind. In mind, everything that can be derived from the practice of mind is ethical, no matter what you do. Take Jesus' time, what the Pharisees did with Jesus, that they accused him to be unethical because he was talking with taxpayers and was talking with harlots, and so they said he has communion with the sinners and so on. That was considered very unethical according to the Jewish law. But he did it. He did it. Why did he do it? Because he had another standard of ethics. He said, if mind commands me to do something, then it is ethical. And therefore, we can have no more a fixed moral code in Christian Science. See, and that, I think, has been such a drag on Christian scientists. They have made a whole moral code what the Christian Science should do and should not do. It was nearly called unethical and immoral if somebody had an accident, if somebody got sick. Sick? Because behind sickness is mortal mind, is sin, you see. So he must have sinned. It's unethical. So people not even dare to say that they are sick. They didn't dare to say that something happened to them. It has become really unethical to have a problem, because then you were no more a good Christian scientist. Isn't that so in this country? It's so in our country. See? Well, that's why one has taken the teaching, the absolute teaching of Christian Science, and has made out of that absolute teaching of Christian Science a moral code. Said, because sickness is error, already, then if somebody is sick, he's erroneous, and so he has done something bad, he has been thinking wrongly, and that's very sinful. You are a bad boy, a bad girl, you shouldn't have done that. If you hadn't done that, you wouldn't be sick. So the condemnation nearly lies on people who have to deal with any problem. That's not the ethics of Christian Science. The ethics of Christian Science is that all is mind. And you know, the implication of it are terrific. The implication of it are that no matter what problem each one has to face, and many people have to face very difficult problems because they got it when they were born, they can't help that they are lesbians, that they are homosexuals. They can't help it. They can't help that they have their traits of characters, that the one is built this way and the other this way. They can't help it. Why should they be blamed for it? So the ethics is, do we go out from mind, and do we try from mind to see what mind wants us to do and how mind is helping us to overcome these problems. We are not going to condemn the problem. We are going to see that from the divine mind comes the healing and the power to heal whatever the situation is. That's why Jesus said, judge not. A Christian Scientist judge more than an ordinary Christian. They judge all over the place. It's always for them something is right or something is wrong. Always. Yes, so we make a break here before we go on.